Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first talk this morning. I'm really grateful that some of you got up this early to watch my talk. And we are talking about one question that everybody is concerned of. It's the usual question, what's up for lunch? No, it's not what's up for lunch. It's, will my hardware work with OpenSUSE? A lot of people are thinking, shall I switch to Linux from my whatever Windows desktop? And they are concerned and say, well, I have no idea if my machine will work with SUSE or not, or with Linux at all. And why am I entitled to tell you about this topic? I have to reflect a bit in my past. I'm a member of a SUSE employee since 10 months. And in a former life, I was the guy responsible for Linux on the desktop at Fujitsu. And we had a factory here in Germany, in Augsburg, where I'm located. And we developed computers, desktop systems. And we developed everything. We developed mainboards, we developed housings, we developed BIOS, we developed everything. And so I have a big experience in hardware compatibility testing, especially for Linux, because my job was get Linux on the desktop for 17 years. So after this intro, we can make it short. We can, this is the executive summary. You know Greg Kroah-Hartmann, he's a well-known kernel developer, and in the Linux Symposium in 2006 in Ottawa, he said, Linux supports more devices out of the box than every other operating system ever has. And this quote is still true in 2022. It's still valid. But I don't want to stop here. That would be a really short talk. We should look a bit at a typical PC hardware. How does it look like? I made a nice, I hope it's nice, diagram about how a typical desktop PC is organized. You will have on the right side a graphics card that's depending on which card manufacturer you use, it will be either plugged in a PCI Express slot or it will be even onboard inside the CPU. Then desktops tend to have audio devices. They have a network interface today. You don't find any mainboard without network anymore. They have other interfaces. We have storage controllers. And of course, we have a lot of peripheral devices that we can connect to our PC. And whatever we are talking about, it's about hardware support. That means if your hardware needs to be supported by Linux, the consequence is you need a kernel driver for that hardware. And coming to kernel drivers, there is the first rule of thumb. Your kernel has to be newer than your hardware. I made a graph about the development cycles. And you know the Linux kernel is developed on kernel.org. There are the developers like Linus himself and Greg and so on. And they release a new kernel practically every 10 to 12 weeks. That's the red bars that you see. And after every kernel release, there is a so-called merge window that is opening. That's the green field. That's for 2 or 3 weeks. There is a merge window. That means hardware vendors can supply driver code that will be merged into the next kernel version. And so on. Every quarter of a year, there will be a new kernel version. And now you see at the top, there is some hardware provider, some hardware vendor that created a new network card, and that network card code, okay, it created it practically shortly after the merge window from the previous version closed. That means he has to wait until the next merge window opens. The big problem is usually you are not running kernel.org kernels. You are running your distribution kernel. You are running what OpenSUSE is installing on your device. And OpenSUSE has a different release cycle. If you see the red bars in the OpenSUSE cycle, you see that there's one release, and then it takes maybe 12 months until the next release. So now we are at the brink of releasing Leap 15.4, and the next version will be maybe 1 year ahead. And of course, SUSE takes code from kernel.org and tries to backport it on its own distribution kernel. But the question is, when are they taking the code? If they take the code also after their current release, they have a merge window, then you see the bar that is going down is just too early for that poor network driver card code that was not yet in the kernel, and it will have to wait a complete year until the next release and we pull code from kernel.org again. That's the bad news. The good news is, if it's a really important device, a hardware vendor can provide additional driver code. It can provide a so-called driver update disk, because SUSE kernel, also Red Hat has this mechanism, they provide a way that you can say, okay, on install time, I can merge another driver. The driver will be installed in the lib modules directory, but not where the usual driver is. The driver will be placed in another directory that is not overwritten by kernel updates, but that is searched first when we load drivers. So if we supply a driver update, this will survive on one hand the kernel updates, on the other hand it will be loaded first when we load kernel modules, and then we have an updated driver that works even when our distribution kernel is not mature enough to support this. But anyway, the general rule of thumb is take hardware that is, in German we say gut abgehangen, that means well done, that is already mature and on the market for a while. Don't go for the latest and greatest machine. They usually have not drivers, and they also usually have some hardware problems that the manufacturer has to sort out. I am talking from experience, so don't worry. So, when we think about drivers, the one thing we should look at is how does plug and play work? Because plug and play is great, and in the beginning it was more called plug and pray, but now it's plug and play. And I made an example. I took one of my workstations PCI device. You know, the kernel, when it boots, it does a PCI bus scan. It gets a long list of what devices do I have. And with this list, it can determine what drivers do I need. And to do that, you look at the information that LSPCI throws out when you ask for a special device. In this case, I was telling them with minus S, this, give me the device at this bus number and give it to me numerically and give me a bit more information. And you get out that 1.f.2, then you get out 106. When you look down, 1 is the device class, 1 is storage controller, 6 is the device subclass. 6 means SATA controller, serial ATA. Then you have a vendor ID and a device ID. Vendor ID 8086 is Intel, and 3822 is just a number. The number is important because usually when you do LSPCI without minus N, you get a text that says, this is the Intel whatever chipset SATA controller, and so that this can be determined. There is a list of PCI devices that has a key that is vendor ID, device ID, and then there is a text that says this is this device. Sometimes if you do LSPCI on a brand new system with an unknown chipset that is not yet in the list, you just get unknown device with the number of the device ID. And then you maybe have a sub-vendor ID and a sub-vendor device ID. In this case, it was 1734. That's the sub-vendor ID for Fujitsu Siemens. And 114D is just a number again. So the kernel loads, kernel does a PCI bus scan, and then it says, give me all device IDs, and then let me see what drivers do I have. And for that, the kernel, every module has information about what devices it feels responsible for. So we can look at the, so we can look at the driver side of life. I took the AHCI driver that is responsible for the controller I just showed you. And in this case, when you do a mod info AHCI, you get the file name, where is that module located in my driver tree. So you see it's the 4.5.3.18, whatever, OpenSUSE kernel from leap15.3. It has the version 3.0 under GPL. Description is AHCI SATA low-level driver. The alpha was Jeff Garzik. We even have a SUSE release here, so you can determine this is a driver from a SUSE kernel. You have a source code version, and then the important thing is you have those alias list. The alias list holds the vendor ID, the device ID, maybe even sub-vendor ID, sub-device ID, or the class ID. In this case, we match for BC, base class 01, subclass 06. So the driver doesn't care what device ID your device has. It says, okay, I'm lucky the device is class 01, subclass 06. I have a driver that is practically match all devices with base class 1 and subclass 6, and so your AHCI driver will be loaded and will be responsible for driving the SATA controller on your system. It's like quite easy. No magic at all. So plug and play is really explained easily. The same we have on the USB side. Whenever you plug in a USB system, let's say a memory stick, or in this case I made a LS USB on my Bluetooth dongle at home. So you see we also have a bus number, a device number, and then we have a vendor ID, device ID, that's Cambridge, Silicon Radio, Bluetooth dongle, and then you get some descriptors, and you see device class in this case is wireless, device subclass is radio frequency, device protocol is Bluetooth, and then down there you see ID vendor is 0812, Cambridge, Silicon Radio, ID product is Bluetooth dongle. Easy as well. No magic, just numbers that match together. And inside the kernel, if you go in your libmodules module, you should find a file named alias. And there is a list of all the aliases that you see in the driver modules. So the kernel, when it wants to find out which module do I have to load, it goes through this list, matches classes or device IDs, and then it knows, okay, this is this driver or the other one. So when you ask yourself, will my hardware work with OpenSUSE or with Linux in general, how will I find out? I could go to do this, but that means I already have the hardware. Maybe if you want to buy a new machine, you don't have the hardware, you can't look up the PCI IDs and so on. But there is a way. We are in OpenSUSE, and OpenSUSE is using the same kernel infrastructure than SUSE Linux Enterprise. And SUSE Linux Enterprise, you can certify hardware for. That was what I was doing for 17 years. There's a website that is called https www.susecom/yessearch. Then you get a search form. You can put in the name of your machine or whatever, or you search for vendors and so on. And on the right side, you see that you get a certification document. And SUSE certifications are great, really, because SUSE, okay, what you can read at the top, product description, that is just marketing, blah, blah, that we copied always from the data sheet where they praise the system in the best words and say, we have the best and greatest and latest and whatever system. But what is important is down the test configuration. So you see what hardware was in the test. And you see there was that special CPU. We had an amount of memory. We had some drivers. Maybe we even had another graphics card and so on. And if you get such a certification, that means you can be sure that your hardware works well with OpenSUSE. It might not be perfect. There might be configuration notes that says, okay, look, everything fine, but if you send the machine to sleep, accidentally it will never wake up again because they have BIOS problems and so on. But that's the big difference in SUSE. When we did certifications, you are certifying a machine as it is. So if I take this notebook here, I certify the machine, and I say, okay, I am certifying this machine for OpenSUSE, and this is the configuration. We do some tests. Some tests are manual. Some tests are fully automated. At the end, you get a test result file, and you submit this to SUSE. And then your hardware, your TAM, technical account manager, will have a look at it if the results make sense and if the results are good. They says, okay, agreed, this machine is certified. Even if we have some minor flaws that say, okay, we have some problems, but we talked about it, we are happy, we know where the problem is, so everybody can read, we have a problem here, but if you decide I want it anyway, it's fine. On the other hand, I also made certifications for Red Hat, and that was quite different, because Red Hat says you have to certify every possible component that the customer can order, and you have to certify, every possible CPU and so on. It was a big mess, and if there was a problem, we had, I don't know how many months of discussions if this is a real problem or if we just can say, okay, give an exception that is not really important for the daily life, but anyway. So now let's have a quick look at some components. I made a spotlight, you remember that the big schematics diagram, now we put the spotlight on the graphics card. For graphics card we have at the moment three major players. We have Intel, we have NVIDIA, and we have AMD, that was former ATI, that was purchased by AMD. When I was starting with PCs, there was also Matrox around, but it's long that I have seen a Matrox card anywhere. Rule of thumb, if you are installing your system on your full, HD or even 4K monitor, and the installation screen comes up with VGA resolution 640 by 480, then you are probably missing the correct driver. And when it comes to NVIDIA or AMD, the thing is you can use open source drivers or you can use proprietary drivers. So for NVIDIA, the open source driver was Nouveau and the proprietary driver was NVIDIA. But recently NVIDIA released an open source driver for their graphics cards. But there are people around that say, okay, it's not a big issue because they just moved the proprietary code to the firmware and now they released the open source driver as before. It's just the interface to the proprietary code. Same is true for AMD. They have open source drivers, they have proprietary drivers. If you use a proprietary driver, there might be the need that you blacklist your driver so that not two drivers are in concurrence for one device. So if I install NVIDIA driver, usually I have a file in etc modules that says blacklist Nouveau. Okay, spotlight on audio devices. If we have audio devices on our mainboard, then it's usually some plugs for speakers, some line-ins, even a microphone in. If you have a notebook, they have built-in microphones, they have built-in speakers. But really, to be honest, all those devices, they are maybe enough to do some Jitsi calls or Teams calls or whatever. But if you want to go to audio production, that if let's say you are a musician and you want to do audio workstation, then you should buy an external audio interface. And the driver situation usually is that you have a sound HDA Intel driver loaded, and the driver provides the interface to the codec. There's a codec chip that then does all the magic that transforms your data into audio signals. If we look at the network, I mean, Linux is a network operating system, so we can be sure that every network interface will work. We have providers like Intel, Realtek, Broadcom. The big difference, just for fun, if Intel brings out a new network card, you will have device vendor ID 8086 and a new device ID, whatever it is. Even if the card is completely compatible to the previous one, just with maybe one or two extra gimmicks, you have a new device ID for that card. That means you have to update your driver so that it knows about that device ID. When Realtek brings out a new network card, I guess since 15 years, the device ID of Realtek is just 8168, whatever it is, and the driver tries to find out what real card it has in front of it. We have, as I told you, LAN, local area network, both copper cables or even fiber is supported. Wi-Fi is supported, but when it comes to Wi-Fi, you have to be sure that you also have the maybe proprietary firmware installed in kernel firmware, otherwise Wi-Fi won't work, Bluetooth will work, and even features like Wake on LAN are supported. So, if we put the spotlight on interfaces, we have a lot. We have USB support from the beginning, USB 1 to 3.1 or even 3.2 now, or when 4 comes, you can bet 4 will be supported as well. Sometimes we have to tell you that it was a big issue when I had a Red Hat certification, because we had a USB 3.1 generation 2 controller on the USB side that was entitled to do 10 gigabits per second, but it was connected to the mainboard with a PCI Express interface that had a memory bandwidth of just around 7 megabits per second. So whatever you do, you were not able to provide the full speed for USB 3.1 generation 2 because the other side of the interface was too slow. And we had, I guess, 6 months of discussion with Red Hat why we can't change this, because it was really a hardware problem. But on the other hand, I know no external device that will, handle 10 gigabits per second for a long time. So it was just a discussion without any real application. We have PS2 for the old keyboards and mouse interfaces. We have even serial support. Serial support is very nice and important when it comes to kernel debugging, because when you start your kernel, you can redirect the kernel messages to a serial console. If you have a second PC connected, you can see what the kernel is throwing out. Even if your machine just flashes up and then your screen turns black and so on, you see the kernel messages and then you find out which driver is not working. You can have parallel interfaces for those who have still a parallel Centronics printer, but they are practically close to extinction. You have even FireWire. I know I have an old digital camera, video camera with small tapes that provides FireWire. We can have SCSI, you can have whatever. I mean, the interfaces, whatever interface you can think of, Linux will support it. Then when we look at storage, when I started with Linux, storage was floppy disk and ATA hard disks. Today, mainboards provide SATA ports for internal drives or even CD writers, Blu-ray writers. There's just a small SATA cable to every device. And hard disks, we support solid state disks today, no problem. Even there are two ways to connect the solid state disk. We can either go to MediaMarkt and buy a 2.5-inch SSD for your notebook that comes with a SATA interface, and you just replace the old disk drive with the new one. Works perfectly because it's just that the machine just sees a SATA disk. It doesn't care if this is on really disks or if this is SSD. The other thing is you can also use NVMe, non-volatile memory express. These are hard disks that are practically directly connected to your PCI Express bus that offer a lot of speed, and they are just small memory modules with 1 terabyte of storage. That's really great. When I think when I got my first PC, it had 80 megabytes of hard disk, and it was the high-end system of the time. On storage, we even support RAID. RAID is supported on kernel level. That means kernel provides drivers to build up a RAID with your hard disks that you have. But some mainboard manufacturers come with, we provide RAID for our workstation. And then they add some code to the BIOS that puts some RAID signature on the drives, and the rest is the job of the driver. So we can support those fake RAIDs, but at the end it's just a software RAID. It's not a hardware RAID that you say, I have a controller where I say I send you the packets that you have to write on disk, and the controller manages the RAID. It's just the CPU that manages the RAID. If we put the spot on peripherals, you see we have a long list what we can use. We can use keyboard, mouse, whatever we connect it to, if it's USB or PS2. If you are in gaming, you can use joysticks, of course. USB joysticks work fine. If you are a creative person, you want to sketch some drawings and so on, you can buy a graphic tablet at Amazon, and works perfectly with software like Krita. Card readers, if you are digital photography, you can plug in a card reader, USB, that's fine. You can read micro SD cards. The only thing that you have to take care of, that you maybe need an exFAT driver if your card capacity is above 32 gigabytes. If you have FAT systems above 42 gigabytes, you need an exFAT kernel driver for the exFAT file system, but that's also part of OpenSUSE, so no problem at all. You can even use smart cards. German Personalausweis is a smart card, wireless smart card. You can get a cheap wireless reader from Rainer at CT. I got one when the Personalausweis came out. That was a add-on to a German computer magazine, so it was for €5. And you can plug it in. There is the Ausweis up too. And really, I can connect to official legal services with my Personalausweis, putting on the card reader. Works perfectly. The only thing that you have to take care of is that the card reader supports the CCID standard. You can add audio interfaces. I'm doing music at home as well, and I'm doing online tutorials, video courses, so I have an audio interface for professional microphones. Works perfectly like a charm. The only thing is when you do music, you might compile your own low latency kernel, because the thing is you have your microphone that goes to an analog digital converter, and then goes into your computer, it processes it in the audio workstation software, it sends it back to the monitor speakers, and there's always a very small delay, that's the latency. And you want the kernel with very low latency so that you don't hear any echoes. When you have a webcam, today we are working remote, everybody wants to do video conferencing, we need webcams. There is the universal video class, device class for webcams, so if your webcam is UVC, it will work just because of the class code. We have external storage devices, USB storage. I have my USB memory here in my pocket. You can plug it and it will work Fun fact, at the side note, I once had a workstation certified for Red Hat, and I had a very special, I don't know what was wrong with that USB stick, but when I plugged it in the kernel messages, I got a notice, kernel panic in 10 seconds. And 10 seconds later, the machine locked up. It was, and we never found out why, but it was really funny because that was the USB stick to kill every Red Hat machine around just by plugging it in. Yeah, you can have printers. I have printers, two printers at home, one office chat from HP that works perfectly with the HP Lib library and USB or network support. Even the scanner works. I have a Brother printer at home for the high-level laser work. It works, scanners work, everything works. So practically, quoting Greg Kruer Hartmann again, Linux supports every device you want. I really guess there are very little number of devices around that won't be supported. I know there is one thing that is a pen that you can write on a special paper and that digitizes it. Maybe this has no driver yet, but the average hardware that people want to use, they work. So that's my talk this early morning. I hope you didn't sleep off after a hangover from yesterday's party. Hope you enjoyed it and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.